welcome to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, where you'll hear advice from experienced safety leaders on how to protect your people and business. I'm Peter Steinfeld. Today, I'm talking with Bart Brown, Vice President and Chief Security Officer at Frontier Communications, the technology and telecom company. After serving for more than two decades in the U.S. Foreign Service, Bart retired in 2022 as the Chief Security Officer for the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, where he led a team of more than 1,200 security professionals, managing a vast array of resources and a budget of $1 billion. In this episode, Bart discusses how to make a security function adaptable at scale, including what to outsource and how to win leadership approval. Let's dive in. Hey, Bart, I'm really excited that you're here today and you're going to give our listeners an opportunity to glean all sorts of insights from the vast experience that you've gained over the years. So thanks for making the time.
Oh, thanks, Peter. I've been looking forward to it.
Well, can you start by giving us just a high-level overview of Frontier Communications? Basically, what does the organization do and then the areas that you oversee?
For those not familiar with Frontier, we're a technology company that delivers what we like to say blazing fast broadband. We connect to millions of customers and businesses throughout the United States. We operate in about 25 states currently. And one thing we are focused on is advancing the digital inclusion and closing that digital divide. We like to call it Broadband for Good campaign. And as I said, over the 25 states, my team, which we formed about a year ago, is comprised of about 20 security professionals. What our team covers is traditionally what you would see in a corporate security team: investigations, physical, technical security, crisis and risk. I have a dedicated business continuity team and also a legal compliance team.
So that's a really big organization. It's a lot of people and a lot of different things that you're doing. How do you manage all that responsibility?
When I first arrived, they did a kind of a welcome to the company overview. And I think it was called Baghdad to Boardrooms. As you know, I left the Department of State, Federal Service, transitioned over. It really is the scalability of it. And just really adapting to the new organization. You know, when I left the State Department, I first started a different national security company and we didn't have a very large team, definitely didn't have a SOC. So it's really getting the right people in place and getting the best bang for the buck, because you're just not going to have, or I certainly didn't have the resources I had in Baghdad. It was apples and oranges.
So what's your key to success for adapting at scale when you don't necessarily have those resources in-house?
I look at adaptability as a necessity, not a nicety. So you absolutely have to, whatever that means to you and your company, adapt to scale. I always love, and my staff hears me say a lot, the Charles Darwin's Origin of Species. It's not the most intellectual. It's not the strongest that survives, right? It's the species that is best able to adapt and adjust to the changing environment it finds itself in. So the species that can adapt is the one that typically survives. And I like looking at that internally, not just as a company, but as my security program. If we don't adapt and we don't move forward, we're going to be left in the past. I was at a seminar a few months ago and they looked at a Fortune 100 list. What was important was the next slide was the Fortune 100 companies that have remained in the Fortune 100 for 25 years. Now that was interesting because they adapted, they changed their product and they moved forward. So adaptability is absolutely a necessity.
So when you adapt, is that taking your internal team and having them figure out ways to do more with less, or also maybe bringing in outside resources to help supplement what your internal team can do?
Yeah, I would say both, Peter. I always like to say Semper Gumby, always flexible, kind of a spin off the Marine Corps motto. So Semper Fidelis is always faithful. Semper right. Gumby is always flexible.
Okay.
Always,
I like it.
Always stay flexible. And shifting a little bit from Darwin to a little Shakespearean reference, I always like to outsource or not, that is the question. So you look at something and I ask, why? Why are we doing this? And do we need to do it? Can I outsource that? So typically a lot of what I'll look at is if I can scale it and I can outsource it, I most likely will. And that's not just physical. We see that a lot with my counterparts in cybersecurity as well.
What are some of the security functions that you outsource? What seems to be easily scalable and outsourceable?
So again, I look at nicety over need. What's nice to have and what do I need? And impact versus impressive. I can build a great security program, but is it what the company really needs, right? Did I over-engineer something? So, you know, in-house, personally for me, and it's different with every sector and every company, investigations, a lot of that's internal, right? Working with chief counsel, business continuity. I think you really have to understand your business. So having an internal business continuity team, I think is critical. crisis and risk kind of flows into that. We keep that internal as well. And of course, cybersecurity. Now, if I look at what you could outsource, we kind of look at the lower echelon monitoring services. So both in physical and cyber, we outsource our monitoring services. Is it monitoring the network or monitoring cameras, doors, and alarms? Because that's a high turnover. Bringing folks in at the entry level to do monitoring, you're going to be dealing with a lot of HR bureaucracy of turning folks over. So outsourcing that, absolutely. CSOC and SOC, is CSOC the Cybersecurity Operations Center or traditional security operations center? I know some companies absolutely insource that. I outsource it. And a lot of what a SOC does is monitor. So when they escalate, it goes to internal folks. That initial monitoring, that 24/7, we absolutely outsource that. Other things I've found successful in outsourcing and really a cost benefit as well would be threat intelligence, open source monitoring, and special services on retainer. So that might be an armed response, surveillance, a medevac from overseas. Things that aren't going to happen that often, but I can't leave a staff on payroll kind of sitting around waiting for that one-off. I like to kind of compare the legal chief counsel. Almost every company has a chief counsel. What they don't have is an army of lawyers. As soon as they have a legal issue, that chief counsel knows where to outsource and bring those specialties in. I take that same concept, whether it be a kidnapping, a medevac, or again, I might need VIP protection on a particular person because of a threat. I scale up and I scale right back down.
No, that makes total sense. But a big question that comes up is how do I best work with these outsourcers? Because they really do need to become part of your team, but they're not. So how do you manage that?
Yeah, getting that team atmosphere, I found, is challenging, but incorporating them. And I'll go back to my time in Baghdad, for example. I had 1,200 people under my command, special agents, techs, active duty, reservists, contractors. It was we. I had third country nationals coming in, providing certain services. It was always the security team, regardless of what your category was or what polo shirt and what logo you wore. So addressing your SOC specialist by first name, getting them in staff meetings. A great example is when I outsource the SOC, although it's a vendor, they go through all the onboarding training as if they're a Frontier employee. So they understand our brand, they understand our culture and our four pillars. So it's really hard for them to provide a service to an employee when they're not even sure what the mission of the company is.
No, that's an excellent point. And when you talk to some of these vendors, do you explicitly explain up front, hey, we're going to almost onboard your employees like they're one of our employees? And do you oftentimes hear pushback or do they say, wow, that's a great idea? And if they don't say that's a great idea, is it like a huge red flag to you?
I usually get more of the latter of it's a great idea. I always say I'm looking for a partner, not a vendor, right? I'm looking for someone that's not going to fire and forget, provide a service, and they're gone the next day. I think a partner is, they will truly see the more I succeed, we both succeed. So if they're providing a service or they're providing a platform, the more successful I am using that, the better for their company as well. So I think that the partnership, whether it be internal training, not differentiating, it's a win-win on both sides. Also too, I think when you look at it, can they provide in-house solutions? Are they going to help you get better? So I always ask that. I see what you're providing today, but what I need 12 months from now is going to be different. Can you evolve? Are they going to adapt with me? Are they just going to say, this is what we provide. It's black and white. That's what I don't really need. I need someone that's going to continue to evolve with me and with cyber.
Are there any things that you should look out for specifically when you're looking to outsource with someone and partner with them, or maybe look out for red flags?
I would say when you have that voice in your head that they're over-promising and potentially under-delivering. So I sit through a lot of sales pitches. I go to GSX, I go to all the large expos, and they will tell you they can do X, Y, and Z. What I will ask is, who are your current customers and can I reach out to them? So benchmarking is a way to get rid of those red flags. So typically when you benchmark, you can go to a known entity, another company, an individual you know, and say, you're using X, Y, and Z services. How did that work out? Can they actually deliver on what they're saying on these systems? So I'm not saying that these vendors are not trustworthy. I just always trust but verify is a fair way of saying it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it really comes down to, are they right for you? Whatever they offer may be great for someone else, but not for you. So you have to take into context of what your mission is and what you need to get out of that vendor. And it may be very different from an organization you left just 6 months ago.
Right. No, absolutely. And can you automate something? So don't just replace something because it's always been that way. I'm constantly always looking at, why are we doing it this way? And is there a better way of doing it? We just don't need to go get another vendor to keep doing, so, you know, the question of why, can we automate it? Should we still be doing it? And also too, before, I would say for the listeners on the show, you know, before you run off and start getting quotes and looking at vendors, look at your other partnerships. Look at DSAC, the Domestic Security Alliance Council. I know some other folks that you've interviewed on this podcast have mentioned that. OSAC, Overseas Advisory Council. There's a lot of great relationships that are, our favorite word, free, that provide services that normally you might have to go out and contract. Now, Frontier Communications, we're a critical infrastructure company, so we do benefit from a lot of support from DSAC. A great example of this, Peter, would be we had to do active shooter training. We've had a lot of incidents recently in Texas and around our footprint. So partnering with DSAC, I was able to get my public sector partners to come in and do in-house active shooter awareness training. And then it wasn't my idea, it was someone on my staff. Let's videotape that, let's make a production and wrote out a virtual campaign. That cost us nothing. Now, if I would have outsourced that, you can imagine bringing in a team of trainers, making a video production, that could have become quite expensive.
Yeah. Can you repeat again, like just for those listeners who aren't familiar with it, where are some of these resources that they can access that could be potentially free?
First is OSAC, the Overseas Advisory Council. So they can go to www.state.gov. DSAC is through the FBI and DHS, Domestic Security Alliance Council. They can just Google that. Attached through that is CISA, so Cyber Information Security Agency. Another great example, again, we are a critical infrastructure that puts us in a certain category, but there's a lot out there, energy, telecommunications, and so on. They will actually come out and help you with your critical vulnerability surveys, looking at your buildings, looking at your setback, looking at those vulnerabilities and assisting you with those surveys. And again, that's a public-private partnership that costs you nothing. And not only are you getting that service, but you're building that relationship when you actually do need the help.
That's a really good point. Getting in front of them ahead of time, engaging with them on these services they can offer, really helps you build that relationship ahead of time.
Absolutely. I mean, a great example we had during our DSAC active shooter awareness training, as we went through, we had members of the local SWAT, local response teams. I said, hey, if we actually had an event, right, we would just call the police substation, right? They said, no, that's absolutely not. What you want to do is call this fusion center here. They would control an active shooter, your SOC could pipe in video. You know, so we started making the connectivity. So before an event, we know exactly where we want to push our video to, because they're going to be flooded with 911 calls from inside your facilities. So we don't want to get caught up in the 911 queue. We want to make sure we're getting to the right entity that's going to be deploying those resources. And and that's that front-end relationship building.
Yeah, never would have known that unless you reached out. Can you share another example of a manual process that you replaced with an automated one? And like, what did that overall effort entail? And what was the impact to Frontier?
Absolutely. So when I first arrived, when I came out of government, for the folks that are listening to this podcast, right, we were very kind of manual driven. So example, phone trees. Everyone knows a phone tree if you serve in any kind of branch of the military or the government. So when you had a crisis, right, you get out the clipboard and you go through a phone tree. And if it was an earthquake, you might not even have a phone tree. You would physically go house to house and do it physically. The one thing I noticed, you know, when I first arrived, they were still doing a very manual heavy process. So, you know, bringing on alert media, mass notification, it automated it overnight. I mean, literally overnight. My first week at the company, we went through Hurricane Ian in Florida. So it was a little over a year ago. And I was just a fly on the wall. And when we did the accountability, luckily it wasn't that bad of a hurricane, but the accountability was fairly painful to watch because it was sort of sending out a spreadsheet to cell phones on folks in the field that are focused on recovery efforts, down power lines, down communication lines. So the last thing you want to do is task people more in the field, right? We're there to help. We want to remove as much as we can so they can focus on it. So I noticed two things. We are tasking people in the field with a manual process. And the second thing, you would have a manager or a director on the response team saying, heads up, we got accountability. And within a day, maybe 2 days, they feel like they had accountability. But that was just the responding elements of, you know, field operations. What if you had someone from IT, legal, HR that lived in that area? Who's accounting for them? Mm-hmm. So that was a big miss for us. If you fast forward a year later to Hurricane Idalia that came rolling through, you know, we did have a mass notification system up and running, and that was great. So we never bother anyone before a storm or during a storm. There's a lot going on. They know what they're doing. after the storm, we made the decision, let's do an accountability survey. So we pushed out the survey. And Peter, I want to say within about probably 20 minutes, we had 90% accounted for at a click of a button, which was pretty impressive. And that other 10%, that just reinforced the use of technology. So not only did we get that accountability in about, again, 20 minutes, 90%, it really reinforced everyone to download this technology. I know a lot of my counterparts, we struggle on getting folks to download an app, to use the tools that we give them. But never let a good crisis go to waste, I always say. So yeah. When a big hurricane is burling down onto your coastline, I remember that night because I'm sitting at my home computer here with my team and I'm watching the cell phone icons populate like gremlins all over the map. And it was a beautiful thing for a security officer. So I went from maybe 10 or 20 people downloading the app to hundreds and hundreds. And it just went across the state of Florida. Because now they're like, oh, I should probably turn this app on. There's something real happening. And kind of another good news story that was, once we got to the point of we were missing 10%, so the team that from HR that was typically tasked with accounting for people, it wasn't security, HR would have to manually call people. So now they're like, this is great, but what about that 10% part? Now we should get the phone tree out, right? I was like, no, we're going to push people back to technology. We're going to keep repinging them and repinging them. And we had employees responding saying, you know what? You've emailed me 9 times. This is really annoying. But it took the 9th time for you to respond to me. I know you're upset, but I know you're good and you're safe. So that was a win for me. And that's what we did. We pushed people back to the technology because they really want to go back to their comfort zone. They want to go back to those spreadsheets.
That's interesting. What other kind of feedback did you get from the employees after making that change? Anything else interesting?
Well, I tell you, the folks in HR, if they could virtually hug us, they would, because we removed a huge, massive burden. And I got a lot of unsolicited, when I say my team, I didn't know the company was looking out for us. This is great. I mean, sure, you'll get some folks that weren't happy that, you know, maybe a personal cell phone got pinged by a company phone. But I would say 99% genuine came back and said, this is great. It was effective. I pushed a button and I moved on. And more importantly, our leadership. Like, we were able to generate and export reports every 3 hours, like just automated, saying, here's where we're at in accountability. And luckily, that was not that bad of a hurricane, right? That wasn't our worst day. But what a good way to battle test it.
No, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing it. So do you have any advice for security professionals on just gaining approval for these outsourcing recommendations? Oftentimes, it can be tough. There's two things. It's like the executive saying, do we really need to spend money on this? And then maybe you have the people that were doing it in-house before saying, I feel like I'm going to lose my job if I give this up and we go outsource. So how do you get that approval both up and down the chain in the organization?
Yeah, you know, I will credit my last boss in my last company, who was the chief security officer. And one thing he did I thought was great, and I implemented it, is when you create your strategic goals for 2024, I know what security should look like. This is my perfect security plan. I take those goals and then I hand it to my boss. Now, most of us that are CSOs, we work for chief counsel. We work for HR. I work for the chief network officer. So they're not from a security background at all. I hand them my strategic list, and this is what I think 1 through 5 is. I ask them, look at this. You tell me what the priorities are from your view. 9 times out of 10, that list comes back in a different order. They're like, I understand why you're at number one. You should take number 3 and put that to number 1. Here's why. So I kind of let them reprioritize. I still want to do the 5 things, but what's the priority? So that was step 1. So if I go after, now if I'm going after priority 1, it was part of their idea. Right. It was part of their input. Also, too, is the buy-in. I'll share a small story. I took this from when I used to work at embassies and you were trying to get a very important decision to leadership at that embassy. I would always say when you go, we call them country team, same as a C-suite, right? You're having a C-suite meeting. Think about the show Survivor and getting buy-in, right? Getting alliances. You have to know the vote before the vote's cast. So you build alliances before going into tribal council. And that's been very effective. So whenever I'm trying to pursue something, if I'm doing it in a vacuum and I can get no other buy-in, I need to question why I'm doing it. 9 times out of 10, facilities is supportive, HR, cyber, and the list goes on and on. A lot of times consumer. If you can get them on the front end and you pitch this before you even start looking for vendors, you already have 4 or 5 folks on your side. And now it's just picking the right vendor, right? And part of that is showing the benefit. How do these other sections benefit from that? And just a couple quick examples, mass certification. Yeah, I'll use Alert Media as an example. that we were able to help our government affairs and our folks that lobbied on the Hill at one company, where they were sitting there and like, if we could only figure out how many employees live in a particular congressional district, I could do that pretty quickly. And this tool, and as congressional districts move, as our employees move, I can keep updating you on our footprint in different congressional districts. That is not the intent of what I first got that platform, but it was very effective. Another quick example, in my current organization, we had a train derailment that was fairly significant. And employee support and Office of Safety said, we didn't know who's in the evacuation zone of this train derailment. How can we figure this out? Because I tell you, Peter, working from home, you don't know where, it's really hard to find out where folks are, your footprint. When we first stood up Alert Media, we are in 25 states. What we learned quickly is we have people living in 48 of the 50 states.
Wow.
So when I tell my leadership, I'm not monitoring 25 states, I'm monitoring 48. So we have a train derailment. It's very powerful to go, here are the 9 people in the blocked out evacuation zone. And we can get help to those people immediately. Again, not why I brought on a platform, but I'm certainly going to help safety, facilities, and employee services.
That's an excellent story. And I love what you said earlier. It's don't be a bull in a china shop. Don't come in and just demand, this is what I want to do and here's why, because I know everything and I've got all this experience. You have to do the work ahead of time to sell the idea in the background, and then everyone will start to come to the same conclusion that you have, which is, hey, this is the right thing for us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they speak a different language, right? I mean, when I left government and went over to my first company, that was a shift. But moving from non-national security to telecommunications, completely different culture, completely different language. So understanding what's important to them and really that buy-in. And a lot of times you'll even get other sections that will partner with you on funding. Say, hey, I have this big pot of money. I would love to have a piece of that. Or could you support me in that way? So I don't think I've ever actually approached a vendor for something solely for security. It's always to benefit at least 2 or 3 other entities.
That's fascinating. And that was not your experience when you were with the government. It's like a little bit different, kind of flipped.
Well, there was a lot of manual processes in the government for sure.
Whole separate podcast, right?
Yeah, that's a whole separate podcast. But it was, I think you have the ability to be a little bit more agile in the private sector on how you go against something. Innovation is huge, right? Just look at a problem a different way. I think another great point of resources and another example was, if you look at one of the first things, and again, I learned this from a colleague. So this is where I benchmark through professionals, through the associations. Look at your insurance policies, right? When you arrive at a company, I was told if you have a BTA, a business travel accident policy, and we mostly all of us do, or you have maybe a kidnapping for ransom policy, something like that. A lot of times there's a build out in there for preventative maintenance, for preventative support, because an insurance company doesn't want to pay out. They want you to be as resilient as possible. And a lot of times you can use 15 to 20% of that deductible already built in to do tabletops, to do governance, review your SOPs. Many times that's not being used. That's just yet another resource. And when you can advocate that to your leadership and said, look, I'm already using existing insurance policies to do this, but I do need this over here. It just gives credibility that you're not showing up to spending. You really are doing due diligence.
That's excellent advice. I think in our personal lives and with our business lives as well, there's probably all these products and services that we're signed up for, and we really haven't read the fine print of all the benefits that they can offer us. So you're right. When you come into an organization, or even if you've been there for a while, go back and really read through what's available to you. And to your point, you may find all this quote unquote free money or free services that can get you a lot further along the path you're trying to go down.
Absolutely.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, what would you say is a top concern for most security leaders today, and what advice do you have for navigating it?
It really is the active shooter or the mass shootings. And what's opened my eyes, we looked at it completely differently in the government. A lot of the facilities we're in were locked down, hard targets. Well, now we're looking at this is happening everywhere, right? So we just did our active shooter awareness training at our headquarters with FBI, and you're educating your people because the events are most likely going to occur at a place of worship, at a shopping mall, at a concert, you name it. Could it happen at work? Insider risk? Absolutely. But it's less likely. It's more likely your employees are going to come across that. Their cousin could have been there. It could have been a block from their house and it's impacting them. So really having those employee services built out and then having the awareness training. So when we did our first session, going back to technology, you know, we wrote out the app. Well, there was a recent shooting at the Texas State Fair this year. So my account lights up. I'm like, okay, you know, what's the chance of I having someone in the Texas State Fair that has their app on? And there it is. I have someone download with the app inside the Texas State Fair. I'm like, oh, wow. It was one of our senior employees. So it took us about an hour to finally make contact with him. He was okay. He was in a lockdown situation during that shooting, and we got him safely where he needed to go. Weeks later, we have our active shooter training. Who do you think was the first signed up? Mm. He was front and center. He said, the app worked, but I want to know what I could have done. And what I found interesting, I kind of already had a concept of what I would do, run, hide, fight. But I had two small children and a wife with me, and I wasn't prepared for that. What do I do when I'm in the mall and I have two children and a wife? Now, it changes your complete tactical response. I think that was showing how technology worked, and also it made people aware. His whole staff showed up as well. So that's a growing concern. And I think getting the awareness training out there, videos on your corporate training, putting your annual corporate security training, get partners to come in and help you. And I think another challenge in security is cyber and physical. And shall they meet or shall they not? And I think they're going to have to come closer together. So traditionally, having a security operations center and a CSOC, a cyber operations center, having a CISO over here and a CSO over there, it's just not going to work anymore. What we've done is we've partnered completely. When we build out an insider threat program, it's together. They're monitoring the networks. We're monitoring the response, the physical threat. So, you know, we do our tabletops jointly. So there's not a tabletop that our cyber team does that I'm not in the room, or vice versa. And what I would like to get to, and I think a lot of companies are going there, is having a joint SOC. You know, you don't have a cyber operations center and a security operations center. I'm a big fan of intelligence drives operations, and you've got to push the intel into the SOCs. I've seen SOCs completely separated. The CSOC doesn't talk to the SOC. They don't even have the phone numbers. That's a recipe for disaster. So I think that's a big challenge of how we're going to bring physical and cyber together instead of siloing them.
Well, Bart, this has been fantastic. I wish we had more time. It sounds like there's four or five additional podcast episodes we could have going off on these different tangents, but thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Peter. It's been great. I appreciate it. I've learned so much from your other podcasts, so thank you for doing this.
Excellent. Well, if you want to learn more about Bart and his work at Frontier Communications, click the links in the show notes. To watch video highlights from today's episode, search for Alert Media on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Have a safe week, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, the industry's most intuitive emergency communication and threat intelligence solution. To learn more about how to protect your people and business during critical events, visit alertmedia.com. Until next time.